Okay, we're going to have our main reading, and you want to be in 1 Kings chapter 18. 1 Kings 18. After a long time, in the third year, the word of the Lord came to Elijah, "Go and present yourself to Ahab, and I will send rain on the land." So Elijah went to present himself to Ahab. Now the famine was severe in Samaria, and Ahab had summoned Obadiah, who was in charge of his palace. Obadiah was a devout believer in the Lord. While Jezebel was killing off the Lord's prophets, Obadiah had taken 100 prophets and hidden them in 2 caves, 50 in each, and supplied them with food and water. Ahab said to Obadiah, "Go through the land to all the springs and valleys. Maybe we can find some grass to keep the horses and mules alive, so we will not have to kill any of our animals." So they divided the land they were to cover, Ahab going in one direction and Obadiah in another. As Obadiah was walking along, Elijah met him. Obadiah recognized him, bowed down to the ground and said, "Is it really you, my Lord Elijah?" "Yes," he replied, "go tell your master, Elijah is here." "What have I done wrong?" asked Obadiah, "that you are handing your servant over to Ahab to be put to death? As surely as the Lord your God lives, there is not a nation or kingdom where my master has not sent someone to look for you. And whenever a nation or kingdom claimed you were not there, he made them swear they could not find you. And now you tell me to go to my master and say, Elijah is here. I don't know where the Spirit of the Lord may carry you when I leave you. If I go and tell Ahab and he doesn't find you, he will kill me. Yet I, your servant, have worshipped the Lord since my youth. Haven't you heard, my Lord, what I did while Jezebel was killing the prophets of the Lord? I had 100 of the Lord's prophets in 2 caves, 50 in each, and supplied them with food and water. And now you tell me to go to my master and say, Elijah is here? He will kill me. Elijah said, "As surely as the Lord Almighty lives, whom I serve, I will present myself to Ahab today." Well, this morning I want to talk to you about integrity in an evil world. A few months ago, BBC Radio 4 Today programme shared an integrity test with their listeners. And I've just picked out one or two things, and I wondered how you would do this morning. You can decide about the validity of the questions yourselves, but here we go. Cheating on taxes if you have a chance. Never justified, rarely justified, sometimes justified, always justified. Your answer. Driving faster than the speed limit. Never justified. It's 20 in middle of Wem, remember that. Never justified. So did you know it was 20 in the middle of Wem? Okay, just checking. Never justified, rarely justified, sometimes justified, always justified. I don't know what that's got to do with integrity, never mind. Keeping money when you find it in the street. Justified, rarely justified. What would you do with that? Not reporting accidental damage you've done to a parked car. Throwing away litter in a public place. And then lastly, buying something for cash, suspecting you're getting a cheaper price because the tax is being avoided by somebody else. Never justified, rarely justified, sometimes justified, always justified. Make of that what you wish this morning. But many companies today, as they recruit people and as they continue to employ people, employ integrity testing. It's become quite a big thing. In some jobs, you have to sign the Official Secrets Act. I did so many years ago. Never came across any secrets worth keeping, but there we go. But this morning, we come across a man who lives in the most difficult of circumstances, and yet he lives a life of integrity. Not just personal integrity, but integrity as a worshipper of God living in an evil age. He's in a hostile environment when everything pressures around him and he still lives for God. Now, in our recent Sunday mornings, we've been seeing that Elijah has been doing the high jump. He's been tested by God with a high jump bar. And as he's passed the test, his faith in God has grown, his trust in God has grown, and the bar has gone up a little bit more. And he's jumped the bar. He was fed by the ravens, and he trusted God. The bar went up. He was sent in a famine to a widow's house, and he passed the test. Last Sunday morning, we saw that the widow's son died. And Elijah didn't know what to make of it, but he trusted God, and through those most difficult circumstances, he was able to jump that bar of faith. Now God is preparing him as he moves towards Mount Carmel for what will be the ultimate level of the bar for Elijah. And here this morning, we discover that God is getting Elijah to move on. He has been learning the lessons in his life. Now the passage kicks off in chapter 18, verse 1, after a long time in the third year. Just hang on to that thought for a moment. It's been a long time. A long time being fed by the ravens, and perhaps an even longer time living in this widow's house with the oil that doesn't run out, the flour that doesn't run out. And it's been a long time, nearly 3 years. Elijah has been learning to trust God over this period of 3 years. It is a long time. The flour and the oil are just enough for each day. Imagine him there. Lord, how long are you going to keep me here for? Lord, how long is this drought going to go on for? How long before you bring these people back to their spiritual senses and they follow you again? Lord, isn't it about time you were starting to do something? Three quick lessons before we jump into the passage, because this is actually important. First of all, God sometimes wants us to wait. Some of us find that really difficult, you know, because we don't like waiting. We like to get on with it. I know some people like to wait till the very last minute, but I like to get on with it. Yesterday is too late. But God sometimes wants us to wait. Elijah's praying. He's experiencing God's faithfulness. He's recharging the batteries. This is all about preparation so that Elijah is ready and he has to wait. Second thing, God has his own timing. He decides when things are going to happen. Notice it's God who says to Elijah, when the brook dries up, the day the brook dries up, now get up and move to Zarephath. Notice it's God who comes at exactly the right point to Elijah as he's in Zarephath and says, now get up, go and find King Ahab because I've got a job for you to do. God's timing is perfect. If Elijah had gone to Ahab at the wrong point, it would have been suicidal. But God's timing is spot on. God always has his own timing. And God's clock runs to perfection. It's never early. It's never late. And as God works things out in your life, as he calls you to serve him and to follow him, there are times in our lives when we need to get up and do things. But there are also times in our lives when God says to us, just hang on. Just wait. Because I'm preparing you. I'm getting you ready. Don't be impatient. Don't jump too soon. And the third thing, God does things his own way. I don't know what Elijah expected. I guess in his heart of hearts he was praying, Lord, will you save these people from their sin and bring them back to their spiritual senses? Maybe he's praying for revival. I'm sure he's praying for some kind of spiritual revival. But God's command comes to him and says, Elijah, get up and go and present yourself to Ahab. The command comes from God. Now, this is a dramatic call. This is a bit like the president of Ukraine being summoned to go into the heart of the Crimea and deal with Putin or Moscow or wherever. This is dramatic stuff. Ahab has been seeking Elijah in every single country. He sent messengers out. Has anybody heard where Elijah is? He's responsible for this. We want Elijah. Look at how frightened Obadiah is. Elijah, there's a price on his head. And God says to Elijah, Elijah, get up. I want you to go to Ahab. You'd never dare go to Ahab unless God commanded you to do that. And God says, do that. So this morning, all good sermons have 3 points, so mine's just got two. First of all, a man called Obadiah. Secondly, some practical lessons. You can't get a lot simpler than that this morning, can you? First of all, a man called Obadiah. First of all, I want you to see that Obadiah is a man who's in charge. Look at verse 3. Now, the famine was severe in Samaria, and Ahab had summoned Obadiah, who was in charge of his palace. Obadiah was an important guy. He was King Ahab's right-hand man. He was like his prime minister. And so they go searching the whole country to find some green grass. And Ahab takes one side of the country, and Obadiah takes the other half of the country because he trusts him. Can you see how Obadiah is regarded? He's the king's right-hand man. He's trusted. He's a key administrator. He's a confidant of Ahab. He's got open-ended responsibility. He's got influence. He's got power. In fact, Obadiah is number three in the country. First, Ahab or Jezebel. I'm not quite sure which way around it was. I'm not sure Ahab ever knew, although I suspect he might have done. But whichever way around it was, Obadiah was third, okay? He was really important. And he lived as an important person in a country that was hostile to everything that he stood for. He was a devout believer. And he maintained his integrity in a world where God wasn't worshipped, where Baal was pushed at every single opportunity. So secondly, we see that Obadiah is a devout believer. We're told that. That is incredible, really, when you think about it. The third man in the kingdom of Israel at this time, in this awful, evil age, is a follower of God. And he's not just a believer, he's an uncompromised believer. He's kept the faith. He's not bowed down to the false gods. He's not worshipped the false gods. He's kept himself true, despite living in the royal court. Obadiah, right place, right time, placed here by God for a specific purpose. You find people like that all the way through the Old Testament. People like Joseph, people like Moses, Daniel, Nehemiah in the presence of the king, Esther used to save her people in exile. Add Obadiah to that list. God has his people. He has his divine purposes. And he places his people in positions where he actually wants them. I've got loads of questions this morning. How was it possible for him to keep the faith in this position? How did he maintain Ahab's trust? I just don't know. How can you serve such an evil king and be loyal to him? How can you keep yourself above suspicion from the king? Yet God placed him there for a specific purpose. God was central in everything he did. He took big risks for God. And the third thing I want you to see about Obadiah is Obadiah worked undercover. Look at verse 4. While Jezebel was killing off the Lord's prophets, she was an evil, evil queen. She just went round slaughtering anybody who served the living God. So whilst Jezebel was killing off the Lord's prophets, Obadiah had taken 100 prophets and hidden them in two caves, 50 in each, and had supplied them with food and water. Obadiah is serving the king. He never sought to undermine him, never tried to betray him, never plotted to overthrow him, yet had a deeper loyalty towards God. Jezebel was as wicked a person as you can get. She was almost devilish by character. Her aim was to throw God out of Israel, to remove God from being worshipped, and to set up the gods of Baal. And she was very effective. Baal is established now as the national god. The true living God's been forgotten. Except there's still some prophets around, but Jezebel goes on a witch hunt. Round up the prophets of God. Drag them in and kill them. Cut them off. Yet what was happening? Well, Jezebel was sending out the search parties to go and find the prophets of God and kill them. Obadiah was collecting them. And he was grouping them together. And he was rescuing them. And he was putting 50 in one cave and 50 in another cave. A little bit like the Second World War, isn't it? When you had people who were risking their lives to protect Jews and others who would have gone to the concentration camps. Here, Obadiah is acting to save the lives of these prophets. Notice Obadiah's redistribution too. And I don't know whether you can get your mind around this. When you go shopping in Tesco, Lidl, Morrison's, wherever you go, you fill a trolley load up for your shopping when you do your weekly shop. Imagine how much shopping you'd need to do if you were feeding 100 people. Just imagine that volume of food each week. Because that's the volume of food that Obadiah's got to find from the royal palace in a famine, when things are short, and get it out to the caves. Just think of the logistical operation to move it to the caves to feed these prophets, and water as well. Don't mistake that, because water won't be running. Water's not around. 3 years of drought. Water's got to be taken and carried. Huge logistical exercise in the middle of a famine. Can you imagine the risk? Can you imagine how he's done it? He must have had people to help him that he could have trusted. If just one person had let slip, Obadiah would have been finished. But God kept him in that position. His life was at risk 24/7. He was in continual battle. He would always have wondered, does the knock come on my door tonight? Do I get arrested? Is the Lord going to protect me today? What drove him? He was a devout believer in God. He was a wise man, and he was appointed by God to do the job that he did. I don't know how he pulled off this feat, but I do know this. He pulled it off because God provided help and protection. You see, when God puts his people into positions, he equips them. He provides for them. We'll talk about that in a few moments as it relates to us. But God puts us in positions and equips us to serve him. And the last thing under this category of Obadiah, see, is fear. He's just like you and me, really. He's absolutely petrified. Cast your eyes down, verses 7 through 14. Is it really you, my Lord, Elijah? And go and tell Ahab I want him. I daren't do that. I'm supposed to kill you. The command's gone out, Elijah, you've got to be destroyed. And if I were to go to Ahab and say, Elijah's waiting for you, the Spirit of the Lord will take you from one place to another as the Lord's been leading you over these years. You'll disappear and then I will get killed because I'll have failed the king. There's been an international search for him. And Obadiah can scarcely believe his eyes that right in front of him is Elijah. Yet he can't go to the king empty-handed. If he tells the king he's met Elijah and Elijah disappears, Obadiah will disappear too. And he's fearful and he asks for a promise and Elijah promises him. How is Elijah able to promise him? Very simply, in verse 1, God says to Elijah, go and present yourself to Ahab. You're going to Ahab. So he shares God's command with him. I don't know whether you've ever studied Obadiah before. What an amazing character, buried deep in the Old Testament. So secondly this morning, let's learn some practical lessons from this. First of all, God uses Christians in unique positions. Why are we in this world? We're in this world because we're servants of the living God. He wants us to be salt. He wants us to be light. We're to serve the living God. We need to be good at our jobs. We need to be good at what God calls us to do in this world. We need to serve our earthly masters well and diligently. But underneath, there should be a deeper aim to please the God that we serve and worship. Every Christian who interacts with someone who doesn't know Jesus Christ is in a unique strategic position. That means you are this morning. You have a unique set of circumstances. You have a unique group of work contacts, school gate contacts, squash club contacts, whatever it is you do. How do people come to know Jesus? Well, a variety of ways, but so often through personal contact with a Christian. Being introduced to them, not by having something rammed down their throat, but just by being the person that you are, living the life that you have in Jesus. And you know, the great thing is this, God wants to use every single one of us this morning. He's placed you where you are, in your unique circumstance, to live for him. Now, you might want to say this morning, I'm not sure I want to be where I am this morning, and I'd rather be somewhere else, and I'd rather be doing something different. But God has placed you, for now, where you are, to live for him and to serve him. And we can't always be thinking about how I can serve God tomorrow, because God calls us to serve him today, in the situation that we find ourselves in. God uses Christians in our normal day-to-day lives. Can this morning you see the place, the role, the job, the situation, the location in which you live as God appointed? That should change our perspective, shouldn't it? Second thing, God uses those who are serious. In this world, we must maintain our integrity. Obadiah did not compromise his faith, even though he was dead frightened. He was devout. He served the king as he was best able to. But Ahab came second to the true king, God in heaven. God's service came first. You'll never impress the world by trying to copy it as a Christian. Christians are different. We're called to be different. We're called to live in a different way. And that difference must permeate every aspect of life. Listen to what Peter says in 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 11. Dear friends, I urge you, as strangers in the world, to abstain from sinful desires which wars against your soul. Live such good lives among the pagans that though they accuse you of doing wrong, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day he visits us. When Jesus came into the world, he said, I am the light of the world. I've got no problem with Jesus being the light of the world. I see that clearly. What I find astonishing, more astonishing than that, is that Jesus says to his disciples, you are lights in this world. And you've got to shine. If you're a Christian this morning, you are to be a light in this world. A light that brings goodness. A light that brings integrity. A light that shines that which is good into our world. Thirdly, we need wisdom in our relationships with people in this world. We need to be faithful servants of God. We be devout. We must be committed. But we need to be wise. We should never be bombastic. We should never aim to cause offense. The only offense that we should ever bring is the offense of Jesus and the gospel. There should be no other offense that we bring as Christians. It's not about compromise. It's about wisdom. And it's required of all of us. And then lastly, God can use our circumstances. Obadiah was used greatly. God placed him in this position. Elijah was used greatly. God gave him a special ministry. But God has placed you where you are, and he's given you a special ministry. There are people that you will come into contact with that other Christians won't come into contact with. You have a unique set of contacts. God has given you your circumstances. He's given you those opportunities within them. It is not by accident that it's happened that way. It's by divine design. It's part of God's plan. God uses even our difficulties, especially if they're caused by our integrity. And you know, sometimes God just steps in and he helps and supports us when we run out of strength. I'm quite sure Obadiah must have thought, what have I got myself into? Why did I hide 100 people in those caves? How can I possibly pull this off? On his own, he had no chance. But you know the wonderful thing? He trusted in God. And when his reserves ran out, God provided. God helped. God protected him. God kept him. And as you seek to live for Jesus in your life, to put him first, to honor him, to be a person of integrity, when you run into those moments and those times of difficulty, you can rely on God to be with you 100%. He never lets his people down. He's never a disappointment. We've been singing this morning about God is faithful, that God makes promises to us. Do we truly believe those promises? Do we truly believe them in our hearts? We need to grow to believe them an awful lot more than we do. But when we run out of strength, God helps us. And so this morning, the crucial message for us is this. We live in a world that's dark, just like Israel. There aren't that many of us in this world who follow Jesus. In this country, there are in other countries at the moment. But we are called to live lives for Jesus, lives of integrity, lives that honour his name, and to use the unique set of circumstances that is God ordained in our lives. That's the call to us, to be ambassadors for Jesus Christ. Are you up for that this week? To be an ambassador for Jesus? To live for him? To shine your light for him? That you might honour him in your life. Let's just have a moment of quiet. Heavenly Father, thank you for the account that we've looked at in your word this morning. Thank you for a man like Obadiah, one of those unsung heroes who lived for you, who served you, and was faithful to you. Lord, help us to do that in our lives. Give us the wisdom that we need. Help us to see that the situation that we find ourselves in this week has been allowed by you, has been ordained by you. Help us to see the opportunities that you give us. And help us just naturally to be able to shine the beauty of Jesus into the world around us this week. And Lord, when we run out of strength, please give us your strength. When we need your wisdom because we run out, please fill us with your wisdom. Lord, help us that we would shine brightly for you this week, we ask in the name of Jesus. Amen.